This is Keeping the Faith, a weekly discussion about issues of faith, spirituality, religion, and ethics. Now here's your host, Steve Shoemaker.
Welcome to Keeping the Faith. This afternoon we're talking by phone with a YouTube star, Kaisi. Kaisi, can you hear me?
Yes, I can.
Great. Good to have you on our radio station here in the Midwest. I've never had a chance to introduce a program quite like this, so let me tell listeners that outside the hallway of the studio here in WILL, there's a poster, or several series of posters of past advertisements for the two radio stations, AM and FM, and one of them says, and I quote, "Two of the peak human experiences are sex and classical music. We'll help you with one." WILL-FM, the classical one. Well, tonight on Keeping the Faith, we'll help you with the other, because our topic is sexuality, human sexuality, specifically sexual assault, sex education, sexual ethics, all as it's talked about very effectively by our guest tonight, Kaisi. Kaisi, let me spell your YouTube name, Kaisie.
Correct.
And tell us how you got started in this. How did you start giving advanced sex education on YouTube when you were still a college student for other young adults?
Oh, wow. I think it was just I started as just a viewer of YouTube and watched other people talk about their lives and their interests. And watching them, you know, we're all very ordinary people. And I think in watching, you get this sense that I can do that. I can do that, too. So all you need is, you know, a cheap webcam, which I went out pretty quickly and bought, and started talking about my life, and it just naturally went to my interests. I was a psychology major. My interest in psychology is human sexuality. I've taken several advanced classes in college on it, and it was just very interesting to relay that information. Other information that I read constantly in research articles, and people responded so well to that because it just wasn't being done by anyone else.
Now, you said you started talking about yourself, and I think that's one of the most striking things about your videos.
Uh-huh.
You really are willing to be very open about your own history, your own feelings and thoughts, and in fact about having been sexually assaulted yourself.
Yes. Yep.
So what brought you to be that courageous?
You know, a lot of people call it courage. I'm not real sure that it's courage in the sense that only if you accept the stigma that sexual assault brings shame and guilt, if you accept that, if you accept that you should be ashamed and feel guilty, then it's going to take a lot of courage to put yourself out there. But if you refuse that, if you refuse to believe that there is shame and guilt to have to do with you, like you are not guilty and you have nothing to be ashamed of, if you really start believing that, you realize that there's no reason not to talk about it. Just as you would talk about any other traumatic experience in your life, it should be pretty much the same. And actually, the video I made where I discuss my experience is actually a message to my rapist. And I had written that literally to him, and then I realized that sending it wasn't going to make me feel any better. So I thought, well, maybe if I put it out there so other people could hear it. And at that time, I had maybe 200 viewers. And so I thought, well, maybe one of those 200 people it'll resound with, and maybe they'll get something out of it. So I filmed it, I read it, and I just put it out there. And before I knew it, not only did I have more than 200 viewers, but there were so many people that were saying, thank you so much. You've given me courage. You've given me the chance to say for the first time that I was assaulted as well. You know, a lot of people have never told anyone before they wrote and told me about it. So,
now, when you made that video to my terrorist, how old were you?
Oh, goodness. That was... I'm trying to do the math here.
You're 22 now, right?
Right. So okay. I was probably... I had just turned 21.
Just 21.
But I was raped after I had just turned 18.
Mm-hmm. Now, your mother is a nurse, and in one of your videos, maybe more, I confess I've not seen them all, but in one of your videos you do talk sort of introduce your mother as a nurse who has focused on dealing with rape victims,
yes,
but also with perpetrators. Tell us about that.
Oh, my mom. Oh, you're going to get me emotional here. But my mom is just, she's an incredible, incredible woman. She, after my brother and I went off to college, she went back to college herself and became a nurse, not really knowing what she wanted to do with that. Tried to work for a while in, you know, the normal hospital settings. It didn't really click with her. And then this opportunity came up for her to be a SANE nurse, which that's what that stands for, a sexual assault nurse examiner. And what that means is they are the nurses that are specifically trained that when an assault victim comes in, they're trained to take care of them physically, to begin the psychological care, and also as a priority to gather the forensic evidence. Whether or not that person decides to press charges, at least that evidence will have been gathered. And so my mom does that, and then she became more and more interested in gathering that forensic evidence from the alleged perpetrator. And really nobody in the state that she's in, and very few people in the country, are trained to do that. So she's kind of just getting into a field that very few people do, and her results so far have been amazing. I'm pretty sure that every case where she has taken evidence from the alleged perpetrator as well have pled out before they even went to trial. So far, pretty amazing results from that.
Now, not only mothers, of course, are concerned when a daughter has been attacked, but fathers are. How did your father respond to this?
I think that it's very difficult, especially for fathers, I guess depending on the father's personality, but they have to deal with the fact that they weren't able to do anything about it and they weren't able to stop it or control it or protect their little child.
Sure.
And that can elicit a lot of different responses in people. So my dad had a little bit of time having to adjust, but now he's incredibly supportive. And between my mom and I, we've had to really kind of teach people that a lot of the things they used to believe about rape were just myths, and they were wrong. So, yeah, there was a little bit of a learning curve there, but he's now really incredibly supportive.
Let me take a moment to further introduce our guest, Kaisie, K-I-C-E-S-I-E, can be seen on many YouTube videos. And she now has, I think, about 68 or 70 of them that are up and available, or at least most of them are. Some from a year and a half ago, some as recently as last week or the week before. In addition, she has a MySpace a blog, and she has, well, maybe Kaisie, you should tell us. Tell us about your different channels and what that means for people. I know that you had told me that the average age of your viewers on YouTube is about 26.
Right.
NPR listeners may be slightly older as an average, but tell us about YouTube.
Okay, yeah. It is really a very eclectic group of people. I think my older viewers in their 70s and some of my younger viewers are in their teens. So we just have such a wide range. And I have on there two actual channels, which that means it's actually just two different accounts where I can post videos. But one deals primarily with human sexuality, and the other one deals pretty much with just my life. And I just talk about me and what's going on in my life. And it's kind of just a video diary that I can share with other people. So my main channel, the one with all the videos on human sexuality, is youtube.com/Kaisie. And then the other one is Kaisie's Vlog. So,
And let's spell that since it's a little bit awkward to hear it on the radio. It's K-I-C-E-S-I-E-S and then V-L-O-G, and that V as in Victor.
Right.
For video blog, I guess.
Right. Yeah, right. That's what they call it. So. Yeah, and then I have a MySpace page, which, of course, is myspace.com/Kaisies. So that's K-I-C-E-S-I-E-S. And on there, you know, I just have, you know, friends and I can interact with my viewers, and I often put out blogs, which is you know, written, of course, instead of visual. And, yeah, we interact a lot more over on MySpace.
Now, Kaisie, this program deals with spirituality and ethics, mm-hmm. and, of course, human sexuality is a great place to talk. There are a lot of issues to talk about in terms of ethics, but you also on your blog have recently written something that's very sort of spiritual, philosophical. Tell us what caused you to write that.
Probably one or two blogs ago about you have to tell me exactly which one you're referencing.
Well, the one I was thinking about, you called it a mind drop.
Right, a mind dump, right.
Mind dump, that's right. Yeah.
That's what I do whenever I have so many thoughts in my head and I can't sleep. I just sit down and I write, and I write and write, and I don't think about what I'm writing. And normally, you know, I don't share that, but I decided that night to go ahead and just post it for people to read. And it was just talking about how often I feel alone, but at the same time, how I've had those experiences where I felt like God or the universe or whatever it is that's out there that's so much greater than us is just surrounding me and holding me. I've had about three of those experiences in my life. It's just the spiritual mountaintop experiences. And I guess that just kind of came out as I was writing about how alone I felt. I was then recalling the times in my life where I felt the exact opposite of alone, which I don't even know what word you'd use for it, but just connected to everything and everyone, but most especially to God.
You said in that blog that, and I quote, "I am always a flawed mess, and I am always a beautiful, complex, and brilliant soul."
Mm-hmm.
Both. How do you bring those two together in your life?
You know, especially in dealing with the sexual assault, I realized that there's so many things that come up that are messy and that are, you know, you might, if you stopped and you looked at them, you go, I don't really like that reaction. I don't really like, you know. But if you step back and if you look at the process of development, you realize that it's all quite beautiful. I have a hard time putting words to it, but if you look closely, your life is a mess, and you, like, my emotions kind of bounce around, and sometimes there seems no reason for my feelings or for the events going on in my life, and so, I mean, that's a reality. But also, if you step back, and if you are able to, you know, step back and look at the bigger picture and everything that's going on, and everything that's brought you to this point, and everything that's had to come together to make all of these things possible, you realize that it's actually very beautiful, and that's a reality as well. I have a video on one of my channels called Paradox of Humanity, and I talk about how we are a paradox, and I think whenever we become extremely honest, not just with ourselves but with other people as well, we notice that we contradict ourselves a lot, and you can either sit there and go like, wait, that can't be possible, I can't be both at once, or you can just accept it. And in accepting it, there's a certain beauty in that.
In that particular video, The Paradox of Humanity, you say that for you, you found strength through vulnerability.
Right.
That you've made yourself completely vulnerable on these videos for anybody who watches.
Right.
But somehow, in spite of the fact that in some of them you even say, hey, I've been depressed a lot, large part of my adult life. I've taken antidepressants, mm-hmm. Psychotropics. You tell people everything. How does that help you?
Well, first I have to say I don't tell people everything. There are definitely lines that I draw, and that's very important. I think, you know, I want to go into counseling, so to have boundaries is very, very important. And you have to decide where those boundaries need to be, what boundaries are important to you, and then you have to guard them at all costs. Because when you start to give a little bit of yourself, people want more and more and more. And if you get caught up in that, before you know it, there'll be nothing just left. It's just you. Like, everything will be out there, and you won't have any of those boundaries. And I do think that's unhealthy. So I'll first have to say that there's certainly things that I keep private.
Sure.
And that's important. But my statement that there's strength in vulnerability, I've believed that a long time, well before I started being on YouTube. And I think that's because when we're incredibly honest with at least ourselves, but even better if we're incredibly honest just with everyone in our life, then there's no secrets. There's none of those skeletons in the closet that are controlling you. I think so often our secrets and the things that we're ashamed of control us. And when we have so many things controlling us, we're very weak and we're very vulnerable to those secrets and to anyone who wants to use those secrets against us. And when you determine, especially, I mean, going through the experience of the prosecution of my sexual assault, you have to be, I mean, your whole life is torn apart, and you have to just be like, you know what? I have nothing to hide. I have nothing to be ashamed of. They're going to try and make it look that way, but, you know, I'm going to accept it that I have nothing to hide, and I'm going to go ahead and put it all out there, and I'm going to trust in people, in humanity, in our system to see through that and to value that I'm not hiding anything. So.
We're about a quarter of the way through our program tonight, and let me throw open the phones to listeners. We do have several lines. You can call into the station to ask a question or make a comment to our guest, Kaisi. Let me just remind you, because of the sensitive nature of the subject, talking about human sexuality, there are certain words you cannot use on the radio. Please mind your tongue. but let me give the phone numbers so that people may call. In Champaign-Urbana, where the University of Illinois is located, of course, 333-9455, that's in area code 217, that will get you to several lines here in the Champaign-Urbana area, 333-9455. In addition, there's a toll-free line for listeners, particularly if you're listening via the Internet. You may call us at 1-800-222-9455. So the toll-free number is 1-800-222-WILL, local lines 333-9455. Kaisi, you've had literally millions of viewers of these 68 or 70 videos you've made. In fact, you have one video that's in the top 20 of YouTube all time, mm-hmm. with almost 28 million views all around the world. Mm-hmm. All of your videos together, more than 44 million people have seen them.
47.
Changing hour by hour.
Yeah.
So you're 22.
Yeah.
You're in grad school. Or have you started grad school?
I haven't yet. I start at the end of the year.
Okay. How do you deal with this?
You know, people always ask me, have anyone recognized you on the street yet? No. Or if they have, they haven't, you know, come up and said anything. So it really doesn't affect my day-to-day life. In fact, I have to step back and go, wait a second, stop and think. 47 million views, you know, that's a lot. And then you kind of have to wrap your mind around how much that is. I do track the different countries. I think I have viewers in 98 countries around the world. And it's huge. It's more than I can comprehend, and I think that's probably good. I think if I quite understood it, maybe my style would change, and I don't want to do that. So, you know, you just kind of almost ignore it, and as much as you can, and just keep doing what it is that, you know, I try to stick to my original purpose and not let those numbers affect me very much, or I don't really consider them very often, so.
Well, I'm not trying to make you nervous. I'm just let's talk a little bit about your religious background. You mentioned in one of your videos that you grew up in a conservative Christian environment.
Huh?
And it was interesting to me that the particular video that you mentioned that was one titled Porn, mm-hmm. Pornography.
Mm-hmm.
And you mentioned in that video that partly perhaps as a reaction against that conservative Christian background. At first, you were very much in favor of pornography, and then later you had second thoughts about it as a feminist, and then I wasn't clear where you are now on pornography.
See, actually, in that video, I guess to make it real clear, but that the purpose of that video was to get people talking,
sure.
about what is healthy, what isn't healthy, about pornography in our society, And I tried not to come to a conclusion on what my views were because I wanted it to be an environment where people could talk about their own, not have to defend their own, not have to support what I was saying, just tell me what they thought. And so I did leave it very open. Right now, I feel that pornography, I don't feel that it's healthy. I think that one of my favorite writers on the topic describes pornography as a man's taking of pleasure from a woman. And I guess I have to be clear that's mainstream pornography. I do realize that there is a great amount of pornography that's not that way, but it's the minority. So mainstream pornography, I don't support it, but at the same time, I'm not someone that's going to be out there trying to create a law against it either, at least not at this point in my life, because I think that the best route is just to get us thinking about it, to get us asking ourselves, is this healthy? Is this not healthy? What about it is? What isn't? What can we take away from it positive? What can we try to avoid? And I think that's probably the best route.
Now, many young people, and I've been a campus minister up here at the University of Illinois for 27 years before that at North Carolina State University for 8 years. I've been around young people for most of my professional life. And many people growing up in conservative Christian environments are ignorant about sexuality. Was that your situation?
No. Actually, my parents were incredible with the sex ed that they provided for me. And I think they just probably did the best job that two parents could possibly do in providing, sex education, just being so open and honest and answering any questions I had about it. But looking among my friends, because I grew up, pretty much with only church friends, and so looking among them, I think that was definitely more the case. Because our church didn't talk about it, I went to a private grade school. They didn't talk about it. I homeschooled for high school, so if I hadn't gotten it inside the home, I wouldn't have gotten it anywhere else. And that actually kind of leads back to your previous question on porn, is that because kids are not getting their education from anywhere, our schools are dropping the ball. In a pursuit of abstinence-only programs, they won't even discuss what sex is, really, and what, they won't answer the questions that our youth have or don't really encourage questions, even. And so they have to turn to somewhere for their education, and my generation has pretty much been the first one that can be raised on porn. That's where so many people my age and around my age got their sex education, and that is what really frightens me. This idea that porn might not be around for people in a Christian environment, even a very conservative Christian environment, is silly because, especially with the internet, it's available to anyone who can get online, can get to it, even if you have blocks on your computer. So,
since perhaps the topic is making some people nervous about calling in, let me ask perhaps a question that sounds a bit negative. But would some people consider what you talk about on YouTube pornographic?
I think some people react very negatively to anyone talking about sex openly. But I think what's important is I try, though I'm friendly, I try to keep it very informational and not, I guess, titillating. I'm honest about things, and as honest as, you can be on YouTube. And I don't know quite how to answer that question, except that it's, I guess I define porn as the intent to arouse the viewer. That is by no means my intent. Mm-hmm. Far from it.
Now, are you censored? Does YouTube, have they ever said, oh, you can't do this, or you have to cut this, or you have to change this? I don't know how the whole process works.
YouTube has never had a problem with my videos, but I do adhere to their terms of service, and I know their terms of service better than probably most users. I've read it a few times, and You know, most people probably never read it. And I try to respect not only the terms of service, but the community standards that are on YouTube. Of course, there's things like, you know, you can't have nudity on there. Of course, I wouldn't have that on my show, but, I mean, there are certainly sensory things in place, but I've never even gotten close to those things. So YouTube has never had a problem.
Let me give the phone numbers one more time for listeners. 333-9455 for local Champaign-Urbana area, University of Illinois. Callers elsewhere, 1-800-222-9455. And I might just mention that if you're having trouble hearing this via broadcast, you can always go to your computer and simply go to will.illinois.edu, punch on AM, and you'll be hearing this live through your computer. So will.illinois.edu and then AM. We have several lines open. Let's go to line number one. Go ahead. You're on the air.
Hi. I appreciate your guest being here. That I'm an older woman, come from the generation where, of course, women didn't even report rape, so I admire anyone who can stand up under any circumstances in any forum and talk about it. And thank you for that. And I was interested in the porn question.
Mm-hmm.
I guess... I hate to use the word interested. That came out kind of wrong, but I used to have a friend that was very wrapped up in it on his computer, and I found it somewhat, I personally don't care for it. You know, I know it exists, and, you know, as long as it, when it was confined to magazines, I guess you know, it was more tolerable, but, you know, once it got on the internet and, you know, my friend was online, you know, like 22 hours a day and missing work and all that for just that one reason, you know, it kind of started creeping me out.
Let's let Casey respond because we do have our whole phone bank waiting.
Sure.
So let's let her respond. Go ahead,
sure.
Please.
I think that you made two good points. Is one, that the Internet's made available to a huge variety of people, not just made porn available, but a huge variety of porn available. And this really increases, you know, I couldn't say for sure, but it sounds like he had an addiction if it was affecting his life and he was spending that much time with it. And so, yeah, definitely porn, there's a real chance for addiction, a sexual addiction there, and it's definitely concerning, I agree.
Let's go to another caller, this time on line four, our toll-free line. You're on the air.
Hello?
Yes, line four.
Uh-huh. Yeah, my name's Kevin. I was just curious about, I'm not real familiar with YouTube, and I was curious, is there some way to subscribe to Kaisi so you can actually get notices, or how does that work with her channel she speaks of?
Okay, yeah, when you get on to YouTube.com, if you want to right away or once you find my videos and you like them, you can sign up for your own account on the site. Of course, that doesn't mean you have to do any videos yourself. Most
and, it, and it's free, right, Kaisi?
Yeah, it's free, yeah. Definitely. And then through your account, you can click, I mean, there's a button probably on, it's on my main channel, it's on every video, you can hit subscribe. What that does is every time you go back to YouTube.com, as long as you're logged in, any new videos that I've created will be right there on your home page, so it makes it really easy. And then anyone else you subscribe to as well. So whenever you log on, you can see, you know, my favorite vloggers, you know, what new videos do they have. It becomes very fun to log on and see what new stuff is out there.
Let's go to another caller. Thank you. Let's go to line number two. You're on the air.
Hello, Steve. How are you?
Fine.
Nice to
see.
Yeah. Nice to talk to you. I just want to thank you for the great experience that you do provide on YouTube, not just, you know, the sexual education, but your blogs. I am, you know, a big fan of yours, and I just want to take this opportunity to thank you for all the entertainment you've provided for me over the last year.
Oh, well, thank you very much. That means so much to me.
Did you have a favorite?
Actually, my favorite is To My Terrorist. It actually had me start to make videos. And I've actually made a video about making videos because of that video. and so, yeah, that would be my favorite because it was just so compelling, you know, the raw emotion that she conveyed. It was just something that, like, I was instantly drawn to.
Thank you very much for the call. Mm-hmm. Appreciate it. Let's go to another caller, this time on line number 3. Yes.
Hello?
Yes, line 3. You're on the air.
Hi. You made some comment early on about, you know, that if you didn't speak out, you know, then if you were ashamed, and then if you weren't, then it was okay. And
mm-hmm.
And I guess I was sort of wondering, I mean, I wouldn't be out there blogging about the great things in my life, let alone the bad things,
okay.
But that's sort of
mm-hmm.
my generation. I was sort of wondering, like, if you think the vast majority of people your age would do so, and also, I guess I'm assuming that the prosecution had a favorable outcome in your case, and up until the time that that was so, or talk about that, or up until the time that was so...
Can you respond, Kaisi? I'm afraid we're having technical problems.
Yeah. Well, first of all, it is still pending trial. So, you know, what the outcome will be, we have yet to see. So I want to, yeah, definitely go back to that. I was not saying that people who are not ashamed will talk about it. I was saying that if you don't have that shame and guilt behind it, or if you refuse to accept, I mean, I think everyone's going to have that who's been through it to some extent, but if you challenge that and you refuse that feeling, then it's not going to take so much courage to talk about it. And at least that would be the ideal for me. But no, you're right. Most people definitely aren't going to go out there and vlog. Most people don't. And I think that's just part of it's a personality issue. Part of it is how, you know, acquainted one is with the internet and how comfortable they feel on the internet. So I definitely want to say that I was not saying that everyone who's comfortable or everyone who's not ashamed of what happened, if they were raped, if they're not ashamed of it, is going to go out and just tell everyone. That's definitely not the case. I definitely feel that there is no one correct response to rape, and everyone's going to have a different response to it. And that's okay. And the people need to do what is right for them, definitely.
We have another caller waiting on our toll-free line, line number 4. Yes, go ahead, please.
I had a question and a comment. My comment is that I think it's amazing that what you're doing on YouTube.
Thank you.
I mean, not very many people have the courage to speak out about sexuality or anything to do with the term.
Mm-hmm.
My question is, you had mentioned earlier about the lack of sex education in schools.
Right.
My question is, how, from a psychologist's point of view, how would you go about changing that?
Well, you know, there's some amazing work going being done in California. I actually got to meet the main researcher. What his team is doing is talking to parents and getting their reaction. California was one of the first states, I believe, to refuse federal funding because they refused to do only abstinence-only programs. So then to back up that decision, they had to do a lot of research to confirm that that's what parents wanted, that's what the community supported, and amazingly, the vast majority of the community did support that. I think we've come to feel that parents don't want it in our schools, that it's undesirable, and we have to look at that. Is that truly the case? And research is showing us so far that that's not the case, that parents do want us in there talking about sex to their kids. So research is vitally important. And from there, then we have to develop a good program through trial and error, through more research. So it's a long process, but I can definitely see that process is starting throughout all of America.
Thank you, caller. Let me give the phone numbers again for others who'd like to call in, 333-9455 in the University of Illinois, Champaign-Urbana area. Elsewhere, including from the Internet, if you're listening in the continental U.S., you may call us toll-free 1-800-222-9455. That's 1-800-222-WILL. Kaisi, one of the big issues in addition to the abstinence-only government approved, current administration approved type of sex ed is about gays, lesbians, transgendered folk. You've made a couple videos about this and are very supportive of those kind of people with those with that sexual orientation. Has that been a difficulty for you in terms of criticism from particularly conservative religious groups?
I get a few messages, but normally I almost discount them because they're very angry. They're very hateful. They, you know, normally call me a lot of really bad names, tell me I'm going to go to hell, and then end it, God bless. You know, it's like, what? It's very... I have actually yet to have received even one message from a religious person that was truly concerned and who talked to me in a calm and reasonable manner. So... Either they just don't feel that it's worth it to write to me, which I do read most of my messages. I can't respond to most of them because I get hundreds a day. But no, I haven't gotten a backlash from that. And I do want to point out, lest people think that I'm, you know, very pro-sex and like, you know, let's teach our kids how to have sex, get out there and do it. Now, one of my favorite video that I've made is Virginity Parts 1 and 2. And those videos, I think I just sat down. I had no agenda. I just knew that my topic was going to be virginity, and I just talked to my computer, and it was very right from the heart. And in it, you know, I get so many people, young people who write to me and ask me, when is, you know, am I old enough to have sex? When is it old enough? And my response to them really is, the longer you wait, I really think the better it'll be. So I encourage people to do what they feel in their heart is right. And not to apologize for that, you know. And so I think that's actually what sets me apart from other people who talk about sex. I'm not the person that is saying, don't have sex, it's really, really dirty, so you should only do it with your spouse. And I'm not the person out there saying, have sex, have lots of it, and start doing it right now. And I've really noticed there seems to be only those two extremes, and so I've tried pretty hard to be more that middle ground and that voice that just says, you know, do a searching inventory of yourself, you know, really analyze yourself, figure out what's right for you, and then act on that, and don't try and feel like you have to explain that to other people or apologize for it, because I talk to people who've had sex and are ashamed of it, and I talk to a lot of people who are virgins and are ashamed of it, and my, you know, I just tell people, you know, don't feel shame over it. Just be aware of your decisions and aware that you can always change them.
And in that, in one of those videos, I forget which number on virginity, but you, I think, have two or three. In one of them, you said that you felt that it's very important that even young people who are sexually active should put thought into every sexual relationship. So for you, it apparently is not something trivial or simple pleasure.
Right. In fact, I think that was probably the most recent one. I've just put out a part three, my most recent video. Talks about, I've just noticed that oftentimes after people have sex for the first time or quote-unquote lose their virginity, I like to say share because I think it's an experience and you share it, that after that, there's very little thought that's given into partners after that. It's like, you know, and I think that stems from this belief that all we have is our virginity, and then once that's gone, then what does it matter? And so my challenge was to get people thinking about what is it we believe about virginity, and does that help us or hurt us?
I want to ask you about your views on commitment in terms of sexual relationships, but we have another caller waiting patiently on line number one. Let's go there first. Yes, you're on the air.
Line one?
Yes, please.
Okay. First of all, I wanted some recommendations on a book or your video or whatever it is that you have that might be good for, you know, 14 to 20-year-olds on understanding their sexuality. And the other thing that was brought up to me the other day by somebody who's on the child abuse hotline is that statutory rape can be charged against an 18-year-old senior who's dating a 14-year-old in high school. And I don't know if there are a lot of people that know that.
Yeah, that's...
Okay, that's all I have to say.
Okay, I'd like to address that first, and that's that definitely. In most states, and of course it varies per state, so you're going to have to look into what your state's laws are, wherever it is that you live. And oftentimes there is a four-year limit. If you're four or more years older than your partner and you're over 18, then it's statutory rape. So if it was an 18-year-old with a 15-year-old, that's 3 years, so it wouldn't be. I think that's definitely very important for people to realize. I also think it's an important law. And I'm really glad that states have recently made that four-year difference, because it used to be that an 18-year-old having sex with their 17-year-old partner could be charged with it, because we had to create a cutoff age. We decided 18. But then we didn't really think, oh, wait, you know, someone could turn 18 before the other one. Is that fair? So we've recently created some laws that help that. But definitely have to look up the laws in your state. As for a book, that's a good question. I'm trying to – it really depends on what people are looking for. The book I always recommend to people about rape is the book I Never Called It Rape. As for just sexuality, you know, I don't know many good books out there right now for that 14 to 20-year-old range. There's some good books, I guess, for 18 and over. I can't think of them off the top of my head, though. But if anyone's really interested, I will, in the next week, I'll post a blog on my MySpace account with some recommendations. So I'll do that. I'll look into it and look through my library and decide which ones I'd really recommend.
And if any of our listeners in the last 10 minutes or so know of good books that would be a resource for young people 14 to 20 on human sexuality, do give us a call and we'll share it over the air. I know we have many people who know many things who listen to WILL. Let me take just a moment to reintroduce our guest. We're talking with Kaisi, whose name is spelled K-I-C-E-S-I-E. And she has many videos on YouTube that you can get through your computer. Some of them have had literally tens of millions of views. She's talked about all kinds of human sexuality, about oral sex, about relationships. She's willing to talk about all kinds of things, including topics suggested by her viewers and readers. And she's talking with us by phone today. My name is Steve Shoemaker. I'm the usual host for these Keeping the Faith programs. Let me just mention that next week on Keeping the Faith, we'll be talking with someone in Palestine on the West Bank in Israel. He's a Lutheran pastor, and he's going to be talking about Christians in Palestine today. Some of you remember John Sutherland, who we talked to about a year ago. From the West Bank, and we'll be talking with him again next week. That'll be March 9th here on Keeping the Faith. We have several interesting programs coming up in the future. Perhaps one of the highlights is Tolstoy's The Death of Ivan Illich, part of the Big Read Project here in the Midwest. And we'll be talking with a panelist of a rabbi, a Christian pastor, a Buddhist leader, spiritual leader here on the program. That'll be on April 27th, and I do encourage people to read that short novel by Tolstoy, The Death of Ivan Illich, before that program. Coming up at University YMCA here at the University of Illinois this week, Going Green, Cassie Carroll, Aaron Pollack will be representing Students for Environmental Concerns at the Y at noon Tuesday, about the current state of recycling in this county. Coming up Thursday night at the University Y, March 6th at 6 p.m., a former guest here on the radio, Carolyn Treadway, who has been trained by Al Gore to carry around information about climate change. That'll be at the Y this Thursday, free program, 6 p.m. At the University Y, Friday at noon, Official English, From the White House to the Schoolhouse. Dennis Barron, Professor of English and Linguistics here at the University of Illinois, will be our guest at the noon Friday forum. There's also an interreligious dialogue series sponsored by the Muslim community here in this part of the Midwest. It'll be at the Unitarian Universalist Church in Urbana Thursday night, also March 6th. And there'll be a panel talking about sharing one's faith from a Jewish, Buddhist, Hindu, Christian, Muslim perspective. Again, that's a free panel this Thursday night. Well, let's get back to our guest, Kaisi, and let me repeat the phone numbers if you'd like to call. 1-800-222-9455 is a toll-free line. In Champaign-Urbana, 333-9455. Kaisi, let's talk a little bit about some of the issues in some of your other videos. Some of your videos are not about sex, and you wax philosophical, poetic in some of them. You clearly enjoy writing. Recently, you talked about five silly little facts in your life. You mentioned you don't drink alcohol, you don't smoke, you don't take drugs. You're a vegetarian.
Yeah.
Tell me about those choices.
I think a lot of it had to do originally with me growing up. The church I grew up in was very concerned with health, and so part of that health message was to avoid, you know, anything that's going to harm your body, and they view that to be, you know, any drugs, alcohol, smoking. They didn't dictate a vegetarian diet, but it was definitely encouraged. So I was actually raised vegetarian. I've never really eaten meat. I've tried a couple of times, and I get so far as realizing there's a dead animal in my mouth, and then I freak out. So it changed kind of from a religious thing into just more a lifestyle and habit. I also do think it's definitely healthy, and some recent studies are finding that vegetarians tend to live 10 to 15 years longer and have a much, much more healthy life up until the, you know, much more active life up until the end of their years. So it's become much more of a lifestyle choice. And then about my interests, yeah, I love to write. I write all the time, poetry especially, and I kind of share that with my viewers from, you know, time to time, and they put up with it. I think that's most, they humor me. But I love to write. A lot of, you know, I created a whole other channel so I could just talk on there and just have it really have nothing to do with sexuality and just me communicating with my viewers on an intimate basis just about my life. And I actually enjoy making those videos probably more so because there's less pressure there. And the people that view me there are there just because they enjoy listening to me talk about my life, which blows my mind, but it's very enjoyable.
Now, some of the things you've shared on YouTube videos are about your cat, Orphelia, and your now fiancé, Kevin.
Yes.
Tell us about one of those in whichever order you'd prefer.
Kevin and I are getting married in about a year and a half, about that long. We got engaged about a little over half a year ago. We've been dating for 3 years, no, just 3.5 years, so taking it kind of slow. Of course, I had to kind of finish out school where I was before I could move here and now live with him. We just bought a house. It's pretty exciting. It's a very nerve-wracking experience, but it's been really fun, and people often ask me, a question I get very often is, how does your fiancé deal with you making videos about sex? And he's just been so supportive and encouraging, and he kind of keeps me focused on, are you reaching the goals that you're trying to reach? Are you making the videos you're wanting to make? You know, how are these things making you feel? He's just everything that I think a partner should be. I'm so blessed to have him in my life.
Does he help you with the production?
No, mostly because if there's, I'm actually really incredibly shy, which a lot of people would never guess. So when I'm alone with just my computer and my camera, I don't feel silly and I can just talk to my camera. But if anyone's in the room, all of a sudden I feel very silly and I can't make the videos. And so I make them alone, and I'm a huge computer geek. So I do all the editing, whereas he tip, specifically tends, anything he touches that's electronic tends to break. So he hasn't helped me there, but he helps me more with other stuff. And
now, many of your videos don't appear to be edited. They appear to be a straight 5 or even 10 minutes straight on. Am I missing something?
Some of them are all in one take. Kind of what people don't see is that sometimes maybe that took 2 or 3 takes to get that good long one.
All right.
Other times they are edited. Certain parts are cut out, and you have to go through and, let's see, I shot for 12 minutes. Well, I can only upload 10 minutes to YouTube at a time. So, you know, am I going to make it a two-part series, or is there 2 minutes worth of stuff I can pull out of that? So that's often the case. Other ones are really edited. I have more fun with those. They're a little more creative, but I try to do it all in one long thing, so it's more conversational and less sterile, I guess. So, and then my cat. I love my cat. She's my little baby. Everyone loves her as well. Everyone says she needs to get her own channel, but I always tell them, no way. I'm not going to let her take views away from me. She's my talent. So people often, I'll get emails, will your cat be in the next episode, please? I love her, and she's apparently won the hearts of many of my viewers.
Now, recently you mentioned that now that you have a house with a backyard with a fence, you may be getting a puppy.
Yeah, I'm waiting for it to warm up a little bit because I know I'm going to have to walk the dog a lot. And that's another reason. I mean, I want a dog for, you know, the companionship, the protection, but also so I know I have to get out there and walk twice a day and, you know, take the dog for a walk. And but we're waiting for it to warm up a little bit and for us to move into the new house, I think, before we get the dog. But I'm pretty excited because, you know, I grew up with dogs, and then I went off to college, and, you know, for years I couldn't have a dog. I don't think we mentioned, I went to college at 16. I was in college for about 6 years, so it's, I've gone 6 years without a dog, and so it's really, I'm excited to finally be able to get a dog again.
So how do you handle disagreements in a relationship that's also includes sexuality? You mentioned in one of your recent videos about the dog that you and mm-hmm. Kevin disagreed about what to name it.
Yeah, sure. I think you have to sit there and prioritize what's important to you. You know, what's worth, I don't want to say fighting for, because that, you know, I don't mean fight about it, but, you know, worth going, like, I really, really want this, and what's worth going, man, all right, you know, whatever you want is okay. And you have to decide that, and you really, really have to view a relationship as a partnership in which you have to be in it jointly. It's about give and take. And more than anything, at the end of the day, it's about the fact that, you know, you really love this person. And, you know, when you remind yourself of that, other things become a little less important. And, yeah, I guess that's my answer for that. A lot of people ask me for advice on relationships, and I am not a relationship advice person. I try and tell people that, but they still think I am, I guess. And so I guess I feel like I'm so young that I couldn't possibly give people advice on relationships, and I think it would come across as silly. But and I think relationships are a whole lot more subjective. There's so many factors going on.
Now, you've studied human sexuality and read a lot of books on it, and,
sure.
and you share that information on the videos and mm-hmm. in your blogs. I guess over the summer, you took on something new. You talked before about becoming a sex therapist mm-hmm. Professionally, perhaps getting a doctorate.
Yep.
Is that still your long-term hope? Or
definitely.
It is. Okay.
Definitely. My goal... My loftiest goal is to get a doctorate in probably in psychology, and then a postdoctorate in human sexuality. And I would love to research sexual offenders, try and create a better program of preventing them from existing, and in better ways of treating them, because currently psychology really looks at sex offenders and says they're untreatable.
Hmm.
And whenever I hear that, I kind of go, that sounds like a challenge. You know, I want to try and tackle that. So that would be a big goal. But I want to you know, own my own practice and be a counselor. And then when I'm older and I have a whole lot more experience, I'd like to be a professor in college eventually.
Mm-hmm. Now, recently, you've taken advantage of the fact you have many viewers and are even going to be selling ads, I guess, on one of your sites. You have cooperated with a group called the Alexander Institute in making some explicit, apparently, videos. Presumably, you're making some money off that and off the ads. Is commerce going to change the way you relate to your viewers?
I think that, you know, first of all, I have to say that the ads that are going to be on my website, I don't actually have it up yet. It should be up soon. I keep coming up with, things getting thrown in the way to set that back. But the ads that are on there, I'm going to have a forum on there or a message board, whatever people want to call it, where people can start asking their questions. So it can take a little bit of the load off of me and all the messages I get. And I have 5 administrators that are going to be mainly responsible for running it. Of course, I'll be there a lot of the time, but I kind of want to let them run it so it's a lot more of a community, not a dictatorship or whatever. And we've actually I've come up with a way that we all are going to split any of the ad revenue made from the website. So I will only make a small percentage of any income from ads on the site. From the Alexander Institute, those were instructional DVDs, more on technique. I try to steer clear of technique issues more on YouTube, but they gave me the opportunity to actually address those questions because I get a ton of those questions. They're just a really reputable company that make instructional videos, and they are explicit. People always ask, well, are you in the explicit scenes? No, I'm not. They had other people that would visually demonstrate the techniques that that I talked about. I just
have Casey, we only have about 30 seconds.
Okay.
All right.
Yeah.
But go ahead and finish. You're talking about the videos.
I've just had some great experiences to work with companies, but no, I don't think it's going to change anything about how I actually work with my viewers because they're what my viewers are my priority.
Let me thank our guest, Casey, whose name is spelled KICESIE, who can be seen on MySpace and on YouTube, Advanced Sex Education, and another channel dealing with just sharing from her personal life. I want to thank Casey for being our guest today on Keeping the Faith and for our callers with their good comments and questions. My name is Steve Shoemaker. I'm the usual host for this program. And I might just mention for people who know, yes, I have been sick, but I am feeling much better. And although I'm in the studio alone today to keep me from being exposed to other germs, I should be back in circulation in about another week. Thank you for listening to Keeping the Faith. See you next week.
You've been listening to Keeping the Faith, a production of WILL AM 580. The opinions expressed on this program are solely those of the participants.
Standing on 8 feet of ice in Antarctica, you can actually feel the call of the Weddell seal below through your boots. The Carthusian monks say you can feel the vow of silence in your soul. I'm Tim Fleming. Next time on To the Best of Our Knowledge, touching the sound of a monk's silence and a seal's call. It's To the Best of Our Knowledge from PRI, Public Radio International.
Tonight at 7 on WILL Urbana. Tonight in Champaign-Urbana, a slight chance of showers and thunderstorms this evening, then showers likely and a chance of thunderstorms after midnight. The low in the mid-40s with south winds 15 to 20 miles per hour. Tomorrow, rain in the morning, then rain, snow, or sleet likely in the afternoon. Little or no snow or sleet accumulation. The high in the mid-40s falling through the afternoon with northwest winds 15 to 20 miles per hour and gusting.
WILL programs are funded in part by a grant from TK Service Center, 806 Perkins Road in Urbana, performing computerized engine diagnostics, alignments, brake, suspension, preventive maintenance, and other repairs. A shuttle service is also available. More information is available at 344-0800.
It's 6 p.m. This American Life is next.
So how many years